the Basketball Podcast. I am Kyle Sandy, the owner of SandySpiel.com, and with me today, as always, Ramin Forgani, my producer and moderator of the podcast. Ramin, it's been a while, but we are back on track. It is podcast season, even though we are in the off season. How have you been, sir?
I've been well, thank you. And you, Kyle? I know we have to try to stay relevant here. Even though it's the off season, we're staying working.
That's right. Basketball is 24/7. AAU season is in the thick of things right now. Got some live period events coming up. We can probably touch on that in our next podcast, if not this podcast. But we're going to try and keep producing podcasts. If not every week, maybe a bi-weekly episode just to let you know about the movers and shakers, coaching carousel, all that kind of good stuff, all the stuff that goes on behind the scenes that you don't really see once the high school season's here. So, Ramin, with that being said, I will let you take the reins.
All right, yeah, this podcast is going to be a bit of the odds and ends, if you want to call it, a few wrapped up things, kind of odd things that usually get left out of other ones. So we'll start with the GHSA executive meeting. They had one yesterday in Macon. That's Monday, April the 10th. And Ron Seibold at the Macon Telegraph did a great job giving us some coverage. And so first thing, I think probably the most important thing, we all acclaim the move to UGA and Georgia Tech for the finals. And at that meeting, a GHSA marketing report saw a 24% increase in ticket sales at the basketball finals this year.
That is true, and that's a good thing. Obviously, when you move up to places where there is civilization and there are some good facilities, you're going to get more people out. But, of course, the other side of that is, well, the games weren't on TV, so it was either pay $10 or something like that to watch a subscription online, which I heard the buffering and the video quality was very poor, or you're going to get shut out and not even going to be able to watch these games. So it was kind of forcing people's hands to get out there, especially with only an hour wait tops or something like that. Really pushing the card to make sure people get out there, and that's probably going to lead to why there are 24% more tickets sold, a nice little increase there. But we saw it. I know you were there at Georgia Tech. We saw it firsthand, Upson Lee game, St. Pius game. That was a big draw. A lot of these games had very good crowds. Cedar Shoal versus Buford, Tift County versus Norcross to finish off the entire season. So there are a lot of great crowds there. And it should be no surprise that there were a nice little increase in attendance.
Yeah, likewise, I agree. Anytime you see ticket sales go up like that, I think it's a good thing for the sport. It's a good thing for these athletes. You know, when they get there, they play in nice facilities. It feels like they're playing in a championship game. But interestingly, at that same report, the GHSA estimated that they're going to lose corporate sponsorships and advertisers for next year. So, something to keep an eye on.
Hey, Sandy Spiel will be a proud sponsor. We could name these, instead of the Ralph Swanger State Championship, Sandy Spiel State Championship. So, I would sign up for that, Ramin.
On to, I think the next biggest thing that came out of that meeting was the change on off-season workout rules. Coaches can now work 4-on-1 with players as opposed to 2-on-1.
Yeah, that's a really big deal. It was a very outdated rule. I heard that. So it would be 2-on-1s, so that means literally only 2 people in the gym with the coach at one time. You can have, even if you had two gyms on the same facility, you couldn't have a coach at one gym and a coach at another gym and have 4. It was really, if you're on school property, just one coach with 2 players. So that was an outdated rule that coaches really didn't like. And of course, I'm sure there's people that have found ways to skirt around it and, you know, look the other way, have maybe something on the side there and get a little more than 2 people. But for the far, far, far majority, it was just two players with 1 coach. So now that's going to help out with skill development. We have 4-on-1, but that's practically an entire starting 5 right there. You're missing just 1 guy. You can just go through so many more things. You can talk about sets and all type of rotations, even on defense. When you have 4 guys, you can actually do some more team concept type things with 4 guys instead of just 2. So I know coaches all across the state of Georgia really celebrating that as a huge monumental win for the state of Georgia. So just if you, it probably doesn't matter, but if you just want to think about that now, coaches are going to be able to teach these kids a lot more at a time and catch up to these other states who might have not had that outdated 2-on-1 rule that's been able to coach many, many players at one time. So now Georgia's going to come forward with the times, and they're going to have even more opportunities to get better as a team and get these players ready quicker for the start of the next season.
Some other little odds and ends. There is a universal coin toss rule implemented, so depending on where you are in the upper or the lower seed of the bracket, there's going to be one coin toss statewide for each round of the tournament that determines it, so you don't have to do individual coin tosses. That simplifies a few things. An interesting one that got tabled, there's a proposal to strip bona fide move status if a player returned to their home school within 12 months. But that got tabled. I think for obvious reasons, that would be at least an attempt to start to curtail transfers, but that did not pass.
Yeah, there's always discussions and legislation trying to figure out a way to stem all the transfer movement, but it's to no surprise that that got tabled. I'm sure eventually something's going to have to get worked out. We don't want to see 150 transfers every single year, but it's just really hard to police it, and something will come of it eventually, maybe, but I guess not this year.
In other news, for basketball, a proposal was tabled to increase seating requirements to 2,000 for Class 7A and 6A, 1,500 for 5A. I guess that's not really applicable for most things in the games that would draw the larger crowds out. Should be in a Final Four state championship arena. Otherwise, you know, maybe one less than 1% of the games in the year could be, that would be applicable to.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I thought everything was pretty decent so far this year. I mean, when you have some of those crazy schools that draw the entire city, like an Upton Lee or a Chip County or something like that, or if it's a close town rival, even like Newton, I was at that Newton versus Chip County game, and they had to shut the doors and probably refused a couple hundred people. But for the most part, usually I don't think there's too much of a problem unless it is a super big game. When it comes to that, it wouldn't be a bad thing to look to increase the seating and find a bigger arena, but I think the main takeaway so far from yesterday's meetings was the big 2-on-1 rule expanding to 4-on-1. That's been the biggest thing that coaches are very happy about. They'll take everything else in stride. They're not too concerned about the other little things right now, but that's a big win for them. They're
going to
ride that into the offseason.
Right. Speaking of seating, there was a proposal to reserve 50% of the seating capacity for the visiting team. It's a bit indeterminate as to what happened to that proposal at this point. Some other proposals to go back to 6 classifications, 2-year reclassification timer was killed, a video review of ejections was killed in committee, and of course they announced they're going to open up the bid for a new executive director to replace Gary Phillips, and some good old GHSA political drama.
That should be good, yeah. I'm very eager to find out who slides in and takes over that role. We can only hope it's someone with a new train of thought, more a modern look at schools and sports and everything going on, so we don't have so many dramatic and crazy rulings throughout the season. I feel like it's every year there's a couple head-scratching things once we get to the state playoffs, and every single sport there's always something that goes on. So a new guy in charge with some modern views would probably help out the kids to say a lot.
Now, this was not one of the proposals discussed yesterday, but it was on a sidebar poll on your website, sandyspiel.com. Should the GHSA move to a shot clock league?
Yes. That is another popular discussion. A lot of coaches right now, looking at the poll, 75% of these people have voted yes, they want a shot clock. So the far majority do want a shot clock. Me personally, I'm one of those old school type guys. I kind of want, can we keep the amateurism and the NBA professionalism? Can we keep those kind of separate? Everything's starting to become blurred line. Even looking at middle schoolers and elementary schoolers, how they're getting covered like the next LeBron James and stuff. high school, we don't need a shot clock in my estimation. I understand why people want a shot clock and stuff, but holding the ball, we act like holding the ball is an epidemic that's happening in every single game. It's not happening in every single game. And if you don't have the horse 7A school with all these 5-star guys, well, it's called strategy. Coaches can use strategy. Who created the four corners offense? There's some good coaches over there in college ball that created that whole thing. So that's all about strategy. They used it in the college level, trickled down here to the high school level many years later. I just like how it keeps teams in the game. If you don't have the horses, like I said, because that was one of my teams. That if we can't compete with someone like that, you want to have a fighter's chance. Now, I don't want to see someone hold the ball for 4 minutes or something like that. That doesn't really ever happen. But I really like it this way without the shot clock, the amateurism. I don't want everything being college level or just too many blurred lines. I would like it to just stay the way it is. But I do understand why coaches want a faster-paced game, a cleaner game. It's going to get them more ready for the college level. Of course, I do understand that, but I like high school to be high school.
You know, I tend to agree with you. I was actually going to bring up the idea that how many times do you truly see a team going into the stall or holding a ball on any single possession for more than 30 seconds? If anything, I think the implementation of the shot clock may actually slow down a game. Because, you know, I'm not sure of the specific stats of how many seconds per possession or how many seconds per shot a high school team usually takes, but I'm willing to bet in the majority of the time, it's well under 30 seconds. And so with the shot clock, teams may be more willing to actually hold and wait, you know, facilitate more offense, a more controlled offense, until that shot clock winds down to within, you know, 10, 5 seconds.
Yeah, that's an interesting take, since we'll actually have numbers to look at. When you see 35 or whatever, down to 30 to 20, 10, someone told their offense to not go until there's about 7 seconds left, and I guess I could see that happening. And then another point that's brought up, yeah, the shot clock's a great idea, but a lot of these schools, are they going to be able to afford it? Can the GHSA afford it?
Right, who's going to operate it? A lot of these schools have enough issues filling their official scorer and scoreboard operator already.
Yeah, exactly. We see crazy stuff happening in the state tournament all the time, or points being taken away. Just malfunctions like that, and yeah, that's another person, that's another job for someone that's having to do the shot clock if it's not all tied in with the game clock, exactly, and there could be some malfunctions there. Some of these schools in rural areas in the middle of nowhere, do you really think Class A public schools are going to have enough money to afford a shot clock and know how to use it? And if there's any troubleshooting involved, like there's only going to be 200 people in that entire town, and if the shot clock goes wrong, you might have some issues there to get it resolved. So I understand the idea, it's a good idea, but it's difficult to put it in play right now. But I'm sure that's going to be voted on within the next couple of years, and there's probably going to be a strong push from many coaches to get a shot clock involved.
Yeah, at the end of the line, I think I agree with you. There's some issues in actually utilizing it, putting it into place. As to whether I like it, I find myself indifferent. I mean, it would be cool if we have it, but I don't see a pressing need necessarily. I'm fine either way. But I'm moving on to that. You have the coaching carousel on your website, and there are a few interesting things. The Winder Barrow girls head coaching job. What's going on there?
Winder Barrow, that's right. Brandon Thomas decided to step away and return to Pickens County, where he used to coach at. So that's a big deal. That's a big job. We have Olivia Nelson-Odoa, the number one ranked player in the entire nation, returning back for a senior season. And we have a lot of other good guards around her. Usually you want to think someone's going to leave that post, that job. But it is open. It was filled by Kimberly Gehring, assistant on the staff, who I believe it's her dad, Ron Gehring, is the head coach of the boys' side. So looks like the Gehrings are taking over Winder Barrow. And, that's a pretty good job for her right there. You know the players, they're loaded with talent. That is a win-now situation. And if you win now, and if you win a state title in your very first year, that is it's a pretty good start to everything. So look for Wonderbro to have some success right away. There's no egos involved or anything like that. If you simply look at the talent on the floor, Wonderbro is definitely a favorite to win the state title.
On the boys' side, you've been talking to me kind of cryptically. You've been telling me maybe a big name's coming back. College coach, what's going on? Can you tell us anything?
That's a good question. There was some speculation that a school was going to land a big time winner in the GHSA that stepped away. I don't know what's going on there. I don't believe anything until it's officially announced and necessarily, it's a done deal because things change from day to day. There's always discussions and negotiations ongoing. So I'm not sure if it's going to happen or when it's going to happen, but if it does happen, it's a big deal. I'm also hearing that a very well-known program from down south might be seeing a head coach leave for a new job. And if that happens, that's another huge, huge breaking development. But overall, the coaching carousel, it's been pretty slow this year. I've been talking to some of my coaches across the state, and even they've been saying, yeah, it's pretty slow. There's, a good job here and there, but there's nothing crazy, great openings and stuff like that. But even when there were some very good openings, there weren't those just jaw-dropping, oh, my goodness, how did this happened. This is a guy with so many state championships coming back and taking this job. It's a big deal. It's been kind of hush-hush so far. One of the biggest moves was probably Woodfield Academy. Courtney Brooks used to coach over there at SACO with Dwight Howard and all those guys. Now he's over at Woodfield Academy. Former rival taking over for Tyrone Johnson, which tried to report on that early, but I was told elsewise, but ended up it was a real deal. So that was a big deal right there. You look at Lanier with Brandon Mayweather coming over from Central Gwinnett. Sandy Creek, John Michael Nickerson. Used to play at Kennesaw State. He's bounced around a little bit, coaching from the college level, the high school level. Was at Excel Christian a couple of years back. Did very well there. Now he's over at Sandy Creek. He was an assistant at Faulkner University. So Sandy Creek was one of the best jobs available, and he really slid in there at the very last second and took that job away. And everything else is starting to fill out. Hopefully it's been kind of slow. Like I said, Mount Pisgah got a former Duke player in Patrick Johnson, so he's taking charge of that boys program now. And then Stephanie Dunn going to the Mount Perrin girls, was at Berry College before that, just coaching at St. Pius, was very successful there. So a couple names have been shifting around, but nothing jaw-dropping just yet. But like I said, I'll preface it, it could be coming very soon. So keep an eye on that.
We talked about this earlier, at least we mentioned it. If you have been to sandyspiel.com recently, you'll notice a lot of tournament coverage. You've been hitting the tournament circuit hard. So give us a quick 60-second rundown of what's going on.
It's been a lot of good action over there at Swanee Sports Academy with Boopstein. I am with them in the spring and summer months covering everything that's going on. We've seen some pretty good, talented players. The biggest takeaway was from the Norman Parker Showcase, and I found out about a lot of good players in Class A Public. Central Templeton, that's a team to really look out for with two rising seniors, Jaquavius Payne Smith and Zytavian Hill. Those are two grown men at the Class A public level. I really like Central next year. If they can get that third scoring option, it could really help them out. Very good group right there. Macon County has a very interesting trio of players. Braden Jenkins averaged 22 points a game this year for them. They made a trip to the Final Four. They're going to be coming back strong. He'll be back. I got some youngsters in McCabian Walker and McCabian Bonner. Walker's a very strong football-type player, but he's a guard, about 5'11", but he can shoot the ball very well. Bonner is kind of an X-factor. He's about 6'5", and lengthy. If he can put it together next year, he could have a very, very big year. And the biggest takeaway was a GISA guy, Kalen Weekly, from First Presbyterian Christian Academy, 2018 point guard, 6'3", good athlete, can score all over, good passer. Now, that's a guy that I think is definitely a Division I talent. You never heard of him because he plays in the GISA, but that's a guy you really want to keep an eye on. So those are the main takeaways from that Norman Parker showcase, just those the small school guys. And also on SandySpiel.com, started the process, which is a weekly, bi-weekly journal following Aquinas' Trey Gilmillion, who was an All-State performer. Hey, a good 2018 guard, very physical, averaged double-double with rebounds and points. That's a kid that's trying to play his way onto the radar of Division I schools. Also, we landed a girls intern in Brianna Singleton, and she is going to do great things for us. She's going to start hopping out and covering some girls basketball across the state of Georgia. I'm very excited for her. She's a very talented young writer and young basketball mind. I'm looking forward to sending her out and letting her do her thing, cover girls basketball. So we do have some exciting things going on over the summer. It's a little doldrums right now, but it's going to pick up very soon.
Well, we tried to keep this one nice and short. We're at around 20 minutes. We appreciate all our listeners checking in with us and the constant support throughout the season. We'll make sure to keep you abreast here at the podcast on the website and on Kyle's Twitter at KyleSandy355. If anything breaking happens, thank you for listening.
Thank you, and we will talk to you soon.